97 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you here on this Friday. And mentioned with the presser yesterday and the announcement from Governor Ivey, along with State Superintendent of Schools Eric Mackey, that school doesn't resume in a classroom version, like on campus at all for this school year, and online distance learning is to begin on April 6th. Now, there's a bunch of families out there that are trying to consume this information, figure out what it means for them. We're lucky to have our friend Renee Phillips, Director of Communications for the Mobile County Public School System, joining us. She is right now just stepped away from the food prep line as you're making lunch for the kids. What are we having today?
That's right, Sean. Good morning. So I'm here at Spencer Westlawn Elementary, where we're making ham and turkey and cheese sandwiches and good. Chips and apple and some breakfast items and fruit and also milk and fruit juice. We've been serving about 250 to 300 meals a day from this site alone, and wow. We have about 66 sites throughout Mobile County where we are feeding children.
What? Okay, y'all are doing 250 a day out there, and there are 66 sites in the state or in the county that are doing that same volume or less, or?
It varies. I don't have a count for the whole county, but it's thousands and thousands of children that we're serving right now with our free, it's actually a free breakfast and a lunch, so you get two meals in one bag.
That is, I said earlier I'd be by to pick up my sandwich. You said, nope, not me, but the children can.
Any child can. You just must be 18 or younger.
Okay. And I do like a good for you and good for the whole crew there, y'all pulling together. That's not your everyday job with the Mobile County Public School System, but you're down there making lunches and talking to us and getting information out. So good on you, Renee. Good on
you. That's right. We are out here. A lot of us on the leadership team are out here because we feel like this is so important to our community to make sure our children do not go hungry. And it's just something we feel like we need to do.
All right. Probably y'all had planned, I'm sure, for this announcement that was made yesterday at the Mobile County Public School System. But what does it mean here at home? Talk to families who have children in schools.
So what it means is that we will not be returning to our classrooms for traditional face-to-face instruction for the remainder of the school year. That doesn't mean that the learning is going to stop, but it's just going to look very different from here on out. We have a plan. We have submitted that plan to the state. We're expecting them to approve it rather quickly, and then we will announce the specific details to our parents about what we're going to do. But it's going to be a mixture of online, and also we'll have to have some alternative methods of instruction as well.
Okay, so it's not all going to be one thing. I mean, you talk about the online, then you said alternative. So same material, just delivered differently?
Yeah, so we have a blended learning structure because we do realize that not all students learn in the same ways. So we're going to have to offer instruction in different methods to make sure that we're still reaching every single student, because our goal throughout this is going to be that we leave no child behind. This is going to be a really long summer, and we talk about the summer slide when students sometimes will fall back a little bit, but we're not going to let that happen. We're going to do everything in our power. We're going to get creative. We're going to be innovative, and we're going to make sure that our students continue to learn and that they stay on track.
All right, so the parents will be, I mean, you talked to us before when this first came up about the packets taken home. There'll be information. Mm-hmm. The parents will have, will they get an email or physically get a letter, what to guide them through this?
Yes. So our plan, so first and foremost, next week is our spring break. And so Mr. Threadgill has stressed that he wants families to have a spring break. Going to look different probably than what people thought it was going to look like.
Yep.
But we want our kids to have a chance to be a kid, to relax a little bit. This has been hard on everybody. It's been hard on our students. It's been hard on our parents. So take a little break. And then on April 6th, we will roll out our plan. And we're going to be sending out some information maybe before that. But starting on April 6th, we'll be learning in a whole new way.
Okay. Let's talk about, you know, your job is with Mobile County Public School System, and I get it, but there may be some representation within the county, what I think may be the issue for the state, and, you know, they talked about it some in the presser yesterday, but internet access, for one thing, is in the 67 counties of Alabama, it's not the same. It's just not the bandwidth is not there in some places.
It's not. It's not even the same in Mobile County. So we do have families that have great access to internet, and they have a computer or two or three in their house, and they'll be able to do this online learning with no no hesitation, no problems. But we also have to take into account the fact that we do have students who may not have a computer at their house and may not have internet access. And so for those students, it may be more of a traditional packet printed out that they come and pick up and they work on. We're just going to have to get very creative here, but we can't, you know, there's a gap in learning already, and we can't do anything to widen that gap. So we've got to make sure we're reaching every single child, and that's what we plan to do.
Talking to Director of Communications for the Mobile County Public School System, Renee Phillips. And when kids then, so it goes through now, June is the end of school. Will they be, if they're fifth graders now, will they be sixth graders come August?
That's the plan. And so we're going to provide a way for every student to move forward. And that's interesting you mentioned fifth grader. I have a fifth grader at home. And so he's missing out on his, you know, last year at his elementary school, but he will continue to learn. All of our other children will continue to learn. And the goal is that when school starts back in August, everyone will be on their next grade level.
Renee, we all obviously feel pretty bad for the seniors of 2020 that won't get the traditional senior year. How are you guys working to get them graduated? What's that going to look like this year?
So we get a lot of questions about the graduation ceremony. We don't know what that looks like. We're going to have to get creative on that as well. We still have them down on the calendar to happen, but you know, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what that looks like. But before we can get to that point of the ceremony, we have to make sure that all of our seniors have all the credits that they need so they can earn that Alabama High School diploma. So we will be reaching out individually to all of the parents and students who are seniors starting on April 6th. And we're going to find out, you know, oh, you need a Spanish credit or you need a math credit, a science credit. We're going to work with every single student individually to make sure that they get what they need so that they meet all those requirements so that they can have that diploma.
And then the question is, will, you know, if they are going on to whatever kind of schooling after high school, I got to imagine those institutions in the state will be understanding because they're dealing with it themselves at a university level, college level, trade school level.
Right. This is not just a Mobile County issue or an Alabama issue. This is going to be an entire year of students who's experiencing this. And so I'm sure that the colleges will be working with our students on that. I did see, like, for example, you know, when you were in high school and you go visit a college, a lot of the colleges have had to stop doing the college visits and all that. But I know a lot of our seniors have already been accepted to certain colleges, or now's the time when they're applying. But I'm certain that the colleges, they know that this is happening all over the country, and they're going to work with us on this.
All right. But for the meantime, y'all are like you're doing right now. You're prepping lunches, feeding folks, and just trying to navigate through this. And we'll be checking in with you, I'm sure. You know, we got, like you said, the spring break. But coming back from spring break, it is school. So if the kids are trying to tell mom and dad there's no more schooling for the year, for the school year, that is incorrect.
That is incorrect. I do want to say something I've noticed just throughout this whole thing. Our teachers are so creative. They're innovative. Our students are resilient. Our parents have been very patient and understanding with us. We're going to get through this under Mr. Threadgill's leadership, and also as Team MCPSS. There's going to be some difficulties, but together, we're going to work together, and we're going to be successful.
And I know with that kind of spirit, you will. As always, Renee, thanks for your time. We'll talk to you soon, and I'll get the kids to come by and get my sandwich.
All right. Well, I'll look for you.
All right. Good deal. Coming right back. More of Mobile Mornings, and we'll take your calls at 343-0106. Plus, Jeff Sessions joining us in the second half of the hour. We'll be right back. Thank you, Kane. 821 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Friday. Talking to my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And, you know, local company, been doing this 11 years. Great work in Mobile and Baldwin counties. A buddy of mine worked for us here at the station, works for us at the house, works for a lot of y'all getting rid of junk. And they are still working. He said, man, just make sure everybody knows we're still online. And, yeah, they're doing their thing. And I think right now is one of those times that people are spending more time at home. I mean, I'm just not going out on a limb here and saying that. Of course you are. And you're probably having a little more time to identify junk around the house. Maybe you're getting organized finally around the house or getting rid of some of that junk inside the house, outside the house. And I keep pointing that out, outside the house, because when you think about 1-800-GOT-JUNK, I often think like boxes of stuff from the guest room or, you know, whatever you got to get rid of. They get rid of, I mean, like weekly basis. Swing sets and garden sheds, big stuff. Or if you got a storage unit you've been paying on forever, go out there. pick through the stuff that you don't remember that's in there, but pick through the stuff that is valuable and let them come get the rest of it. Save that money every month. Get 1-800-GOT-JUNK to get it done. And it's socially distant. You can do it this way. There, you know, Trey said, man, we're experts in social distancing. I said, I know you are. Okay. You go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Make that appointment. The set of the appointment time. And then they'll show up. You don't have to get anywhere close to the people if you have a worry, even though he says we're doing all the sanitizing, Sean, on the trucks and, you know, all the, we got the mask, we got the gloves, we got all that stuff. He said, but you can stand back, say, I want that stuff gone. They'll quote you a price and they'll get it done. And you can even pay with a credit card. You can do this online. You can, I mean, so no worry with this. And it's a probably the time you've been waiting for. He's like, I'll get around to that when I have time. Well, y'all got time right now. So get with my buddy Trey at 1-800-GOT-JUNK and let him get that junk out of your life today. And once again, he told me something too. This was cool. I never knew. You can do it completely remotely. Like if you have junk at a address somewhere else that you can't be at, they can go there. You can give them the address. They can go. They can look at what you want, you know, describe what you want to have removed. They can quote you a price on it. And over the phone, you can say, yeah, get rid of that. And they get it done. It's pretty cool. 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. One of those great local companies. All right. And by the way, too, coming up in just a little bit, I will talk to Jeff Sessions with some commentary on what was passed out of the Senate and what the House is being called to vote for today. And as soon as that vote's done, we're also supposed to have Congressman Bradley Byrne on the phone. He talked with us earlier this week, talked to us last week, and we'll get some more breakdown of the checks, the one-time checks, and then the small business portion, which has a little more intricacy, but is pretty interesting what this could mean for small business loans and keeping people on the payrolls. We saw the jobless number come out yesterday. What, 3.1 million?
3.28 million.
28 million. I'm trying to hedge it down. Okay, 3.28 million. What does it mean for small businesses if you get this relief to not have, you know, more people being laid off out there? What if they could stay on payroll until things get back to normal? It could be a very big deal. All right, phone number is 343-0106. 343-0106 also works for the text line. Let's go to John in Mobile. First up, hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good, man. What's up?
First of all, love your show, avid listener.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering, with all this going on and schools being out for good until next year, we're yet to hear from the Mr. Threadgill personally. I mean, he hasn't addressed, he hadn't had a press conference, anything.
I don't know. See, what I do, number one, I know Renee, like and her husband and I went to school with together, so I've known her for a long time, but she's also the director of communications for the school system, so that's who I pick up the phone and call. I guess I could call Mr. Threadgill. I just kind of, you know.
I don't think you'd be able to get him, because I don't think he does interviews.
And I'm not sure what kind of interviews he's had. I do know that he was part of that statement yesterday. He released a statement about the schools and how they're going to finish out the school year. So he hasn't disappeared completely, but right. he's been part of the state's effort and the local effort here.
So I'll see if I can get him on. I hadn't thought about it, but just, you know, kind of habit wise, you know, she's the director of communications, and sure. I know her. Her kids are in scouts together and all that, so that's who I holler at. So I'll look into it, and I think there's a whole bunch of, and she even said to me off air, she said, hey, there's still parts of this we don't know, right? So after the spring break, she's going to plan to come back on with me when they have everything, this distance learning stuff. You know, I mean, how do you do this? Because, like, our house, we're lucky. We got internet to where the kids could do the whole thing online, but maybe down the street somebody doesn't. So I don't know how they do this. I don't know.
Right.
Do you have kids in schools here?
No, sir. They're all graduated.
Lucky man.
Yep. Lucky well, man. I enjoy your show and listen every day, so I appreciate it.
Thanks, John. Appreciate that. Leaves line open at 343-0106.
Yeah, and a quick look at the latest numbers for our state. 538 cases of COVID-19 in Alabama, and we're seeing the number rise here locally. 21 confirmed cases in Mobile County, 5 in Baldwin County, and 2 in Washington County. And there are now 3 deaths statewide, 1 in Madison County, 1 in Jackson County, one in Lauderdale County. And according to the Alabama Department of Public Health, they have a page that's constantly updated. They say that 4,082 total tests have been performed to this point. They do say that those tests represent those that were satisfactorily performed by the Alabama Department of Public Health. So I'm not sure whether that includes some of the private testing or some of these tests that churches have been able to get a hold of and test people in the community. But that's where we stand right now. And you look at a large swath of the more rural counties in our state that have no confirmed cases to this point. And I'm not sure how many tests have been performed in those counties, but we're talking Clark, Monroe, Conecuh, Escambia, Covington. I mean, I could go down the list. It looks like a good 15 states that still have no confirmed cases. So hopefully as testing ramps up, we're able to get more of a hold on the actual statistics.
One thing to think about, too, on the stats, and you and I have talked about this for a while, and I don't know how to fix it. I'm not saying that they should be able to fix it, but just to realize this, when we talk about the fatalities in a given state or nationally out there, they give it as a percentage of cases. But there's no way to know on any given day the number of cases. Mm-hmm. That's what's bothersome. So the sample, and maybe there's a statistician out there that can define what I'm trying to ask here, but the sample is skewed because the sample are the people that are sick enough to go get the test, right? They're bad enough they're going to go get the test. And out of that, that becomes the full sample, and then you have the percentage that are fatalities out of that. But in reality, we know just from seeing testing come online and these numbers of cases rise, there's probably way more people with mm-hmm. COVID-19 than are ever tested, right?
Yeah.
So the actual percentage they would give as a fatality, let's say it's 1% fatal rate, it might be in amongst the people that got the test, but I don't think you have any way of knowing how many people in the general populace have it. So that percentage, yes, within the people that got tested, they can accurately give a percentage, but that's not among all COVID-19 cases. You would have to test everybody in the country at the same time,
mm-hmm.
and that information would be good for one day.
Right, and like you said, I mean, there have been some people that have had coronavirus and have shown little to no symptoms at all of the virus. So you're right. The number,
but they
of
would count. They
it,
would accurately be a case of COVID-19,
they,
right?
They would, but because of the limited testing, they're asking that, you know, unless you're really sick or unless you're displaying these true symptoms, you probably shouldn't go and get a test. And that's why we don't know and probably won't know for a while the true percentage of fatal cases. And also, you got to keep in mind some of these cases, they're trying to roll out some that have a more quick result, or that they're able to give the results more quickly. And we're talking some maybe 45 minutes. But to this point, a majority of the tests, you got to wait a week to get the results, or even a lot of them 4 to 5 days. So a lot of the numbers that we're seeing today, as they say cases are rising, we're actually looking at the number of cases from maybe 4 days to a week ago.
So we're on delay. And we don't know the actual number mm-hmm. of total. So that, I mean, that's obviously this is not some kind of a policy. This is present and real and a real thing. Spreading through our community now, spreading through the country. I just wonder on the, I think there are more cases than we know, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you relate the fatality stat, it's working off of a very small or smaller sample of the total number of cases.
Right.
That's kind of where I'm going with it. All right. Talk about this more coming up. Plus, Jeff Sessions joins us here in just a couple minutes. You get your questions to the text line for him at 343-0106. And we're moving on. It's Friday edition of Bobio Mornings.
.836 on FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings on a Friday. Right now it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
All right. Good morning, Dalton. How are you boys doing?
Hey, we're doing great. You know, we've been talking about the great deals at McConnell Automotive, and we're also coming up on the end of the month. What you got for us?
Well, buddy, first of all, we want to reach out and help any way we can in the community, and we're doing everything we can. So if anybody has any car dealership needs just for donations, I don't know what that would mean, but we're here for everybody. But on the front of the deals, everybody listening needs to take advantage of this before the end of the month. 0% for 84 months, on almost every GMC and Buick we have. Plus, you get to defer payments 4 months. So it's a perfect time to take advantage of a bad situation, I guess is the way I'd say it. And we've got some of these remaining deals on Mardi Gras trucks. And I don't know. I don't know if in the last 12 or the next 12 months there'll be a better time to buy a vehicle than at McConnell in the next couple of days, not until the end of the month. And, man, just point people to our website, McConnellAutomotive.com. They can check the deals out.
All right. Thank you, Mitch.
Y'all have a great Friday and weekend, buddy.
You too. That's Mitch McConnell. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
And the numbers continue to grow. Now 538 cases of COVID-19 in Alabama. 21 cases have been confirmed in Mobile County, 5 in Baldwin County, 2 in Washington County. And we look at hotspots like Jefferson and Shelby County in the state. It is it's on our doorstep now. Also, look just down the road in Louisiana. You look at the biggest per capita increase in number of cases, Louisiana, in that mix, putting itself in a growth rate, per capita growth rate, like actually New York or Washington State. You said actually Louisiana tied with California for number of fatalities from this as well.
Yeah, so New York and Washington have the most fatalities among states, but Louisiana and California both, according to the latest stats, have 83. And just think about the size of those populations and how big that number is for Louisiana.
And so the fight is the fight's being conducted at a state level, also, of course, a national level where it comes from, and the fight to save the economy happening at a national level. Joined by former Senator Jeff Sessions to talk more about that right now on Mobile Mornings. Senator, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Sean.
So you watched what happened in the Senate with them passing their bill out. The House called for a vote today. Kind of walk us through what you see in this bill. Do you think this is going to be the last time, or is this the first bite at the apple?
I think it depends on how prolonged this virus event is and how severe it gets. So, yes, I think they're talking about on more. I got to say, though, we've never seen anything, Sean, as big as a $2 trillion special bill. I mean, this would be the largest expenditure of money in the history of the world at any one time. There's just no doubt about it. And, of course, the president is right. If we need to get people back to work and get this as soon as we can, because every penny of this $2 trillion is borrowed. We're already in debt. So when you spend another $2 trillion, you just got to go out on the market and borrow the money. So that's the reality that we're facing. It's certainly not a happy thing to have to do. But if we avoid a prolonged recession, and we get this economy back, get people, more and more people who can work, that would be great. And maybe we won't need an additional expenditure.
We can hope. Senator, I talked to lots of folks like me here at home about this kind of front porch discussion at safe distance, as well as I've talked to economists this week on the show, other government officials. From my perspective, the fundamentals of the economy have not changed. For example, if we look at the economic collapse of 07, well, we had systemic problems inside the financial system. In this scenario, it wasn't something inside our economy, but from something outside, right? So it seems like if we get the virus gone, the economy should come back faster. The elasticity should be strong.
Well, that's what we hope. We want a V-shaped recovery.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw my good friend Stephen Moore on last night on Fox, and that's what he wants to see happen, and he believes it's possible. So, in other words, it goes down. We get the virus situation under reasonable control, and the economy is so strong and so vibrant before this happened. That's a possibility. It could bounce back pretty quickly. Although, I don't think we can count on that. I don't think he said he was sure that would happen, but that should be our goal, and that's what this stimulus, really, he correctly said it's not a stimulus package. It's a compensation package. It's a package to help people to be able to live reasonably well when they might not have been able to. Particularly small businesses that just don't have the wherewithal to continue to pay workers or even take care of themselves. So we're on a path that we've never been before. We want to do everything possible to mitigate the financial damage as well as the health risk and get this economy back as soon as possible. That's for sure, and New Orleans is not too far away, so mm-mm. it should get our attention.
Whew.
For sure.
Yeah, their cases, I mean, and as a per capita a jump, they have been at the top of the list. Senator, looking at the question on the economy here, and you mentioned small business, and yeah, I'm neck deep in that, so I've focused on that a good bit. We have the one-time checks going out, but from what I understand that has been passed here for small businesses, it's in a way, it's a way, number one, to keep those small businesses solvent, keep them there when things get back to normal. It's also a way, and I think it's a good thing, the small business taking care of people, it keeps them off the unemployment rolls, right? I mean, it's still going to be this money forgiven, so it is taxpayer dollars paying those salaries, but it's almost administered at a private level. I mean, I like it. I think it's good.
Good. I'm glad you do, because it's not easy to get money to small businesses since so many small businesses are unlike other small businesses.
Right.
It's not one size fits all, and the circumstances are all different, and it's not going to be easy. I think there's some concern that the small business money may run out quicker than some of the other monies, and so it could be something that there'll be a demand to put more into that area. But to the extent to which we can keep people working on the payroll and not close businesses, so that there's an opportunity, as soon as the health danger ameliorates, that they can go back to work and the company isn't closed and their job is still there and their families will be secure. That's what we want to happen. And that's what all this is about. It's so much money, and having been there and seen it, a lot of it won't be well spent. And one of the things I did in the Senate, I chaired for a number of years and really helped lead for my career the steering committee of the Senate. And one of the things that we would do is take these pieces of legislation and we would go through in a fine-tooth comb and find out and identify in a bill for our highways bogus language in it, bad language, special interest things that weren't justified, and we would try to get it out. So when you have a bill that's got $2 trillion here, I think the Republicans did a pretty good job of getting most of the pork special interest political left-wing liberal stuff out that Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats put in. So now the bill is going back today to the House after the Republicans improved it, and in the Senate, and the Democrats apparently have already agreed they will support it with those changes. So it should pass today.
Now, this is
hopefully they've scrubbed it, but I got to tell you, there's no way with that much money you can fix every problem in it.
And is it possible to, I mean, honest to goodness, to have read every part of this? I mean, if you're a member of the House, this is coming over from the Senate, all the pressure is on you to vote. Even if it's 800 pages, to digest that and know it, could you actually do that? Could you have turned that around?
Well, that's the point. Several things are problematic. Number one, it's 800 pages. A lot of this cites to other bills and language pursuant to section such and such and such and such chapter. Then you got to go back and read that to know what the language means. And that's how bad things get slipped into legislation. And that's what I always tried to be part of, a team that read those things to fine-tooth comb to try to be able to stop bad things. Things that don't appear in the bill itself, but will be impacted by the language. So you're right. I mean, digging into it's hard. But also in this situation, Sean, just think, how would you get money to small businesses in a way that's fair? I mean, it's not going to be perfect. Errors are going to be made. Good people, even working hard as they can, are going to and rushing a bill like this will probably make errors, good faith errors even. Some of them might be like Kennedy Center should not have gotten any money out of this. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Not a dime. Should. Why don't they give it to the museum in Mobile?
Right. It's,
I mean, now, why do they get money out of it? So this is ridiculous. But not a lot of that was taken out, and it's a lot better than it was. And at some point, you're either going to delay the bill over the Kennedy Center, or you're just going to hold your nose and vote for it.
There it is. That's it, you just described what that's the real situation, especially when you're under a timeline, right?
Exactly. I mean,
so if you oppose and then somebody down the road will say, well, they voted to fund the Kennedy Center. Well, actually, they voted to get a relief package through, but this happened to be stuck in there, and they had to vote for it to get it done. That's the frustration. Earlier in the week, we talked about, and this would be a sea change, this would be a completely different way to look at Washington politics, but maybe they could have just, meaning the Democrats and Republicans, found the things that they agreed on and passed that bill out first. Get that done, and then come back and take another bite at the and another. You know, just get the things that they agree on that to get to the people and get that done, and unattach that from all this other stuff.
Well, they would say that's probably what they did, that's what they would probably say they have done. But I do believe that the pork stuff was not that large as a percentage of this entire monstrosity. I'm just worried about how you could actually word it in a way. I see that Eric Ulan, who is now the director of the President's Legislative Affairs Office, worked for me for several years on the Budget Committee. He's so good, so smart. And so I'm glad to see him in there. But the President wants this thing done. You're put in a position where you're going to delay the bill interminably over a series of things you don't agree with, and even the people that disagree with it might not be right themselves. So it's really hard to know, but I think the bill is necessary. I think it will give confidence to the markets and to the American people. It will be a step in the right direction. It's a huge amount of money. Some of this money is borrowed, so it would be by companies and all, and will be paid back. Some of it may not be paid back, but all it's not in the long run, it won't be a total $2 trillion hit to the debt. So hopefully we'll get real benefit out of this, and the problems and the weaknesses in the bill won't be so large.
Let's shift to the realpolitik of this, and China saying, putting out through, even though they don't have, I think they were actually banning the websites, and they banned Twitter, but on Twitter they have their people and their agencies trolling out there saying the United States was the cause of COVID-19. You seen this?
Yes. Well, I know they've been saying that. Yes, I haven't seen exactly how it was. I feel real strongly about that. I'm going to be laying out a real plan to confront China. I became even more concerned as Attorney General to learn just how much fraud, how much theft of our secrets, how deliberate their plan is to take over the internet and 5G high-speed internet. And then we saw in this instance the cold-bloodedness of the Chinese government, not the people. You know, they punished and in jailed people who told the truth about the virus. So this government suppressed the truth. One English study said that if we'd been told 3 weeks earlier about the nature of this virus, 95% of the cases wouldn't have happened.
Wow.
And so I don't know what the facts are, but I know this. Had they told the truth earlier, the world would be so much better off. Deaths would be much lower. But this is the nature of these totalitarian communist regimes. It's all about the revolution. truth is subordinate to advancing the regime. They oppress their own people, and they lie to the world. And so when you deal with a country like China, you've got to know how cold-blooded they are. You've got to verify everything they say. And, Sean, they've made very clear that by the time of the Mao Revolution, 1949, by 2049, they want to be the number one power in the world. And they've laid out a plan to get there. And part of that is the way they're doing it is making huge profits, having huge trade surpluses with the United States, and they're using those profits to build their military and strategic power. And we got to end it. And we got to get real about it. I think this event, particularly the drugs, say they're threatening to withhold critical drugs from us. That should send a message to Congress and to the American people that we're in a different world now. We've got to understand the threat that China poses and stand up to them. By the way, the Marines just announced their long-term plan for modernizing the Marine Corps, and it represents a major shift to Pacific and to China, because that's where the threat for the future is. There's no doubt about this. And I don't think my opponent gets it. He continues to say odd things about it, and I just think that it's a huge issue for America. If we do this thing right, we've got the leverage, because they can't have a vibrant economy without this huge amount of products they're selling into the United States, and we need to cut back on that.
Jeff Sessions, as always, a pleasure. We'll have to pick it up again. I got a lot more questions for you, but we're out of time for this hour. Thanks for being on.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
All right. Coming right back to wrap up here on Mobile Mornings, 8:53. Thank you, Kane. 8:57 FM Talk 106.5, and wrapping it up on this Friday morning. But we'll be back in 3 hours after the Mike Gallagher Show for Midday Mobile. And it looks like it depends. We got a note here from Congressman Burns' office. As soon as the vote is done, he's going to join us on the show. Now, when is that? I don't know. They said this morning. And now we've heard some stories that maybe there's some monkey wrenches thrown into the mix. I don't know. Y'all aren't getting the first check, let alone the small business assistance, until they vote. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mnuchin this week talking about with 3 weeks, and then a second flight of checks maybe in May. I know they're probably gearing up, but it doesn't officially start go until that vote in the House and the president signs off on it. So keep your eyes on that story and give you the latest on it. Also, some of the science world and the fight against COVID-19. We'll talk about that coming up with a guest starting at noon today on Midday Mobile. Y'all stay close.